In the introduction to his Haggadah, Rav Pesach Kron tries to capture the essence of Pesach through the following story. It's a personal story he tells that at 21 years old, tragically, he lost his father. As the family was sitting Shiva, he describes how generous and extraordinary his community was. One evening during Shiva, they went downstairs to the basement and found it filled with enough food to last for months. They were incredibly appreciative of the generosity that the community displayed to them. But as he tried to move on and make a parnassah to support his family, being the oldest child in his family, they were struggling. He and his mother were struggling very much to be able to pay the bills. And one day, a generous individual by the name of Chaim Israel asked him to meet together. Ray Kron sat down with this individual, Chaim Israel, and Chaim said to him, I have something for you and for your family. And he gave him an envelope with a couple of $1,000s, which at that time was an incredibly generous sum of money. Ray Kron describes how he knew how helpful it would be for him and his family, but they did not want to accept tzedakah. They didn't want to be people who were being supported by the community. And he went to his mother, and they both agreed that they would not be able to accept the tzedakah. And he called Chaim Israel back and said, thank you so much for the offer. Unfortunately, we don't feel comfortable taking it. So Chaim said to him, you misunderstood. You think that this is tzedakah? I'm not giving you tzedakah. I'm not giving you a gift. I'm giving you a loan. Giving you a loan with no end date. When you and your family are ready to repay it, you'll repay it. And under those conditions that this was going to be a loan, right, Kron and his family felt comfortable accepting the money. And they took it, and it was very helpful in the short term, helping them pay bills, as Ray Kron was able to finally establish a parnassa and be able to start paying bills on their own. And then he and his mother started to set aside money each month to be able to pay back this $2,000. Finally, after about a year and a half, Ray Kron called Chaim Israel. He had the sum of money, the $2,000, and he asked if he could come by to Chaim's office to return the money. A meeting was made. Ray Kron shows up at Chaim's office, and he presents to him an envelope with the $2,000 that he had borrowed. Chaim says, thank you very much, but I don't want the money back. Ray Kron was appalled. He said, I told you I couldn't accept tzedakah. You told me it was a loan, and we accepted the money only because it's a loan. And now I want to return the money to you. Chaim responded, you're right. I told you it was a loan. I mean that it was a loan. But not to repay me, to pay someone forward. Because when I was struggling, someone was kind enough to give me money to help me get up on my feet. And I'm simply repaying the loan now to you. And your responsibility is to take this money and help other people. And Ray Kron uses this story to capture the essence of Pesach. What does Pesach mean? I mean, think of Pesach, we translate into English as Passover. It means to pass over. And on many levels, that's true. What the Targum suggests is it actually means compassion. When you think about what passing over meant, it meant that Hashem had compassion on every Jewish home. That's what Pesach is. Pesach is a holiday of compassion. I want to try to build on this idea together. Rav Galinsky, one of the great Bali Musar of the previous generation, tells a story about how when he was in Europe in the 1930s, the start of World War II, he had an opportunity to sit down with the great Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski. And Rav Galinsky tells a story how the night before he was going to meet with Rav Chaim Ozer, he was terrified, he was petrified. Rav Galinsky was a serious Ben Torah. He was sitting in yeshiva. He was learning. At the time, he was learning Yevamos. And he stayed up all night preparing for this interview, for this meeting with Rav Chaim Ozer, thinking about the kashas that Rav Chaim Ozer would ask, about how they would talk and learning. And he went through his mind, what are the questions that Rav Chaim Ozer is going to ask? And as he showed up to the meeting and he's ushered into the office of Rav Chaim Ozer, Rav Chaim Ozer said, I have three questions for you. And Rav Galinsky thinks, okay, I'm ready. Rav Chaim Ozer says, the first question is, do you have a place to sleep? Second question was, when's the last time you've seen your parents? And the third question was, can I see your shoes? Because oftentimes, by seeing a shoe, you could see the person's financial status, their well-being, and what they needed. Rav Galinsky says at that point, he was so touched, he understood an insight into the Ramah. The Ramah at the beginning of Hilchos Pesach, after the Shulchan Aruch talks about how we have an obligation to learn Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach, the Ramah says, and we have to give Maos Chitim. Rav Galinsky says, well, what's the and we have to give maos chitim. Doesn't seem to correlate, doesn't seem to relate and to learning Hilchos Pesach. So why was it specifically that the Ramah has this and we also have to give maos chitim? What does that have to do with learning Halachos 30 days before Pesach? Rav Galinsky says, at that time I realized that as much as we have to learn, Torah, we have to learn the Halachos, we have to know what to do, the proper way to have a Seder. He said the story with Rav Chaim Ozer, I understood that as important with that, or part of that, an outgrowth of that, is and we have to care for other people. Because Pesach is not only about knowing Hilchos Chametz Matzah, not only about knowing Hilchos Seder, but about knowing Hilchos Ben Adam L'Chavir, Hilchos Rachamim, Hilchos Pesach, Hilchos Compassion, how to care for other people. Rav Yonason Sacks, the Rosh Yeshiva of Landers, also shares this idea in a halachic sense. He suggests that we know this halach of maos chitim. So typically tzedakah can be put into one of two groups. This is basic hakira. Is this a din in hilchos tzedakah? All year long a person has hilchos tzedakah, I have to give meiser money. The maos chitim is an outgrowth of that. It's an outgrowth of the general rule of hilchos tzedakah. Or is it a separate and distinct halacha that is part of Pesach, I have to give maos chitim, I have to give special tzedakah. What's the nafka mina? Very Sacks, or if Sacks suggests the nafka mina is a poor person who's not in a financial situation to give tzedakah is exempt from tzedakah. But he has to celebrate Pesach just like everyone else. The Mishnah tells us, even ani hamisparnes min hatzedakah, the poor person has to celebrate Pesach just like everyone else. And Rav Sacks points out that we see the fact that an ani has to give maos chitim tells us a unique and special characteristic of Pesach is to give tzedakah. Not simply because kol hashana kula, all year long, I have to give tzedakah, but it's a unique part of Pesach. To celebrate Pesach, the essence of Pesach is to be rachmanim, is to have compassion, to have this term of Pesach is to be compassionate, to be able to demonstrate sensitivity to other people. And the truth is, it's this way because at our core, as Klal Yisrael, that's who we are. We are Bali Chesed. One of the drushas we share in the Haggadah is Vayares Anyenu. And Hashem saw our pain. He saw the persecution. What does it mean? Well, what would be a specific example? So Chazal tell us, Zu Prishus Derech Eretz. Our pain was Prishus Derech Eretz. What does that mean? It's translated as the separation of husband and wife. Why is the definition, why is the model that best describes our pain, the separation of husband and wife? I can think of so many things that cause pain when we were slaves in Mitzrayim. Why is it that the Chazal understood by Yaris Anyenu, Zu Prishus Derech Eretz? So Rav Rimon quotes Rav Soloveitchik, who says, at our very essence, we're givers. A husband and wife joined together to have children, to build a family. And Zu Prishus Derech Eretz meant that because we knew our babies were going to be killed, husband and wife separated. They were taken, that the capacity to give, the capacity to give life, the capacity to build a family was taken away from them. That's Anyenu, that's the greatest persecution, is to take away our capacity as Klal Yisrael to be givers, because again, at our core, at our essence, that is who we are. Rav Kook, in his commentary on the Haggadah, says, why is it that we say halachmanya at the Seder? We know, again, this invitation seems to be like somewhat of an odd and obscure invitation. What exactly is going on when we say halachmanya? So Rav Kook suggests that at this point, when we become free people, when we were freed from the slavery of Mitzrayim, we were free to embrace who we really are. And he says, the mid of chesed is our essence. And the quote translated in English is, so immediately upon liberation, we engage in the act most characteristic of us as a people, which is feeding the hungry. In other words, that's who we are at our essence, is we are people of compassion. We're givers. That's what it means to be a Jew. And that's what Pesach is all about. But why? Why is this Midah so critical? Why is this Midah such a crucial part of the Pesach celebration? So I want to suggest two approaches together. Approach number one, it is a defining characteristic of our Chiras. Yes, it's true, as we said, Klal Yisrael are Bali Chesed at our core. That's who we are Bali Chesed. However, more than just being Bali Chesed, it is a demonstration of Chiras. In terms of Halachmanya, as we just brought up, So Rav Rimon also quotes Rav Soloveitchik, who says, one of the defining characteristics of a free person, what it means to be a Ben Chorin, is my ability to care for others. A slave can only care for himself. He's so involved in self-preservation that he can't care about other people. But to be free is to be able to give to other people. And so therefore, Pesach is a time of freedom. It's a time of chayrus. We're celebrating this notion of chayrus. It's not just, as Rav Kook suggested, a return to our essence, but it's to be able to be free is to care for other people, right? Jonathan Sachs quotes Primo Levi. Primo Levi was a survivor of Auschwitz. And he describes Primo Levi, the scene after the Germans fled Auschwitz. He describes it was January, it was freezing. And at that time, he worked to light a fire to bring some warmth to the rest of the survivors. At that moment, Primo Levi suggests, something changed. For the first time in years, he felt free. What changed? His ability to help others. And Ray Sachs writes, sharing food is the first act through which slaves become free human beings. By offering to share our matzah with other people through Halach Ma'anya, which is immediately after Yachatz, after we break apart the matzah, by offering to share our matzah, we transform it from a bread of affliction to a bread of freedom, because we know that matzah really is symbolic of both. At times we refer to it as a bread of affliction, at times we refer to it as a bread of freedom, and we wonder, how could it be both? What Ray Sachs says is, well, if we're totally self-centered, it's a bread of affliction. We ate it as slaves in Mitzrayim, but it could also be the bread of freedom. By sharing with other people, by giving to other people, that transforms us into being givers, that transforms us into being free people. And so reason number one, why being givers is so critical, by being compassionate is so critical on Pesach, is it's a demonstration of our chayrus. Approach number two is to really go back in time and to wonder, how was it, through what were we zoche to be redeemed? And if we go back in time and we look at the storyline, we look at starting with Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu, at his core, his transformation to becoming a leader was a transformation to being a compassionate person. The Torah tells us, Vayigdal Moshe, and Moshe became a gadol. It could be, technically, he became 20 years old. Out of understanding in terms of what exactly meant that Moshe became a gadol, but it's immediately followed by Vayar b'sivlosam. He went out to see the Jews working and to see their pain. And Rashi, quoting a Medrash, describes that Moshe, he figured out he was a Jew. And he could have put his feet up luxuriously in the palace. And instead he said, if my brothers and sisters are working hard, I need to be empathetic. I need to see what's going on. But not only do I need to see what's going on, if you look at the Medrash describes, he actually got dirty. He started working with them. He physically tried to help each and every one of them with their work. That was the compassion of Moshe Rabbeinu. If we were to really read through his biography, the story continues with him seeing two Jews fighting, and again he steps in. He says, I have to be able to help other people. And we see the same thing in terms of how he meets Tzipora, his future wife, is also because he's compassionate to daughters of Yisrael. But what is it that then catapults Moshe back into the position of leadership? He starts it when he's in Mitzrayim, but now he's in Midian. What catapults him back? So the Medrash describes his test. Va'af Moshe lo bachanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ela betzon. He was tested with the sheep. Amru Rabosein, our rabbis describe that one of Moshe's sheep, Julius Yisro's sheep, ran away. And Moshe saw it running away. He chased after it. And finally, he caught up to it. It was drinking water from the river. And when Moshe saw what was happening, he realized this sheep must have been parched. It must be so thirsty. And his heart broke. He said, I didn't realize that the sheep was so thirsty. Had I known, I would have tried to take care of it. And he gave himself a hard time for not understanding the needs of each of the sheep. He picked up the sheep, he carried it on his shoulder and brought it back to the house of Yisro. And at that time, that was Moshe's test. Hashem said, to be such a Rahman, to be someone who's so sympathetic, he's a leader for Klal Yisrael. And so the story continues, right? The next test that Moshe has is that Moshe sees a burning bush. And the truth is, anyone could have seen the burning bush. However, the Medrash describes that the Torah says, Kisar Leros, that Moshe notices the burning bush. That's what was unique. That was different about Moshe. He noticed the burning bush. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Sar Vizafu Zel Leros B'Tzaron Shel Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. If Moshe can be attentive to even this bush, which seems to be burning and suffering, once again, that attentiveness, that compassion, that ability to see and care about other people or other objects, Lefichach roi hul yos roa lehem. Miad vikrai love Elokim mitoch asne. Hashem said, Moshe, he should be the leader for Klal Yisrael. He's destined to be the leader for people because of how sympathetic and empathetic he is. And that's who Moshe is. That's this midah of rachamim, that this midah of being able to care about other people. And perhaps beyond just Moshe Rabbeinu, but even Klal Yisrael, the Kedushas HaLevi wonders that we know Bnei Yisrael must have davened for years. So why is it all of a sudden at the end Hashem hears their tefillah? Vayomer Hashem ra'o ra'isis ani ami asher b'mitzrayim b'tzakasam shamati b'nei noksav v'atai nei tzakas b'nei Yisrael ba'yelai. All of a sudden Hashem decides to listen to their tefillah. What changed? So perhaps what changed is the language of Hashem ra'o ra'isis ani ami. They became a nation. They became a group. They became an entity. And at that time that they became an entity, Klal Yisrael felt that sense of communal responsibility of caring for one another. At that point, Hashem says, I'm going to redeem them. This is the time that I'm going to listen to them. If I see how they care about other people, that is going to trigger the compassion of Hashem. And the truth is, when we put it into that context, so that's how Hashem has created the world, is a little bit of a midah keneged midah. When we show that compassion to other people, and Moshe, when our leader shows that compassion to other people, that triggers the compassion in Hashem, and through that, nigalin, we were redeemed. But hopefully, if we can take this idea one last step further, hopefully it'll bring about a future as well. Halach Ma'anya, which is a later addition to the Haggadah, in which we talk about inviting other people, was instituted after the Chorban HaBayis. We know it. At the end, we say, L'shana haba ba'ara di Yisrael, right? We're in Galus, and we want to return to the Beis HaMikdash. Are those two random ideas put together? We want to invite other people. We also want to return to the Beis HaMikdash. Or is there something that links the two together? So perhaps it's worth thinking about how compassion for other people is actually a key to the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. Giving to other people, including other people, being compassionate to other people, is the key to Lashana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael, is the key to being able to be returned to the Beis HaMikdash. If that's what enabled us to be redeemed from Mitzrayim, it's also what will enable us to return to Beis HaMikdash. And I'll illustrate this with one last idea. Chazal describe many different reasons why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, right? We know Sinas Chinam is one, and then we know the big three, they violated Gil HaRayah, Shuchas Damim, Avodah Zarah. Those would seem to correlate to both Batei Mikdash. However, the Gemara Baal Metzia tells us, no, because we held firm on strict judgment. Because we were so firm in terms of our judgment, this is the halacha, I'm not going to be mochal any more than that, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And I believe it's Rav Chaim of Volozhin who wonders, it seems to be a little bit of extreme. That caused the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. And furthermore, if we already have two reasons, how can we have a third reason? And he suggests something profound, which again, I think really illustrates the point that we've been discussing, which is that, you know, these other reasons are why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But as much as there was Sinas Chinam, as much as there were the big three Averos, Hashem could have been mochel. Hashem could have said, you know what, I'll look past it. When Hashem said, you don't look past each other, you hold firm on the halacha, this person owes you the money, you're going to demand that he pays you the money. Hashem said, if you're going to hold firm, then I'm also going to hold firm. Conversely, if we're willing to be mochel, if we're willing to forgive other people, so Hashem says, I'll forgive you as well. And that's the key, halach mani, that's the key to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. I'd like to end with a story which hopefully ties this all together. There was a secular Israeli journalist who, unfortunately, his wife became very ill. And she needed to travel to the United States to receive the medical treatment that would be necessary for her hopefully to be able to have a refuah shlema. So this journalist and his wife, they went to a relative in America, again, to receive this treatment. And after a little bit of time, the medical bills, despite them having insurance, the medical bills were incredibly, incredibly prohibitive. Very, very expensive. And they were racking up a very, very large debt. This couple staying at relatives, and they asked the relatives, is there anyone you could think of us of for us to turn to receive some financial support to be able to pay for these exorbitant medical bills? And their cousin said, this relative said, one person I could think of, the Satmar Rebbe. Go to the Satmar Rebbe. He's been known to be very helpful in these situations. And the second Israeli journalist, his face turned pale. The Satmar Rebbe, do you know what I write about him? The harsh criticisms, the mockery that I make about him in my articles? There's no way I could appear in front of the Satmar Rebbe. But as the bills kept on coming in, this journalist realized, I really don't have a choice. I have to swallow my pride and try to sit down with the Satmar Rebbe. And so he called the Rebbe's office, made an appointment to go to the Rebbe, and figured, okay, he'll have to take some criticism, some critique, but it's worth it if it could be helpful financially. And he sits down in front of the Satmar Rebbe. He said the Satmar Rebbe looks up. It was the most angelic look. The Satmar Rebbe, the purity of the Satmar Rebbe was so clear to him. The Satmar Rebbe said, you know, what's your name? And he told the Rebbe the name, and he said a smirk came on the Rebbe's face, and he figured, okay, now the Rebbe's going to let me have it. The Rebbe asked him some questions about his wife's medical treatment, and he answered, and he said, the Rebbe said to him, okay, you know, how much money do you need? And this journalist said he had a hard time even getting out the words. He was asking for so much money. But he managed to get it out. And the Rebbe said, can I ask you a question? And this journalist said, okay, here it comes. It's going to put me on the spot in terms of things that I've written about him. He said, it's probably very exhausting for your wife to schlep back and forth for a treatment. You know, the treatment is hard enough as it is, and the additional commute time is probably very draining on her. What do you think it would cost for you and your wife to be able to stay in a hotel room near the hospital to make it easier for her? And the journalist thought a little bit. He threw out a number. The Rebbe calls in his shamus, and he asks him to write a check for, you know, the previous amount of money plus that additional money, and he adds on a few thousand dollars as well. And he gives the check to this journalist and says, your wife should have a refuah shlema. One request. And again, the journalist, what's that request going to be? He says, I want you to call me. God willing, she should have a refuah shlema. And when the treatment's done, I want you to call me and make an appointment before you go back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the journalist says, thank you. Still doesn't think he's totally out of the woods. He assumes that the muster, the rebuke is going to come at that meeting. At least the Rebbe was sensitive enough to let him, you know, move forward with the treatments, and he'll only give him the muster on his way back there to Israel. And Baruch Hashem, the treatments are successful. The money was literally a lifesaver for this journalist and his wife. And as the treatments come to an end and they're getting ready for their return flight there to Israel, the journalist realizes that he's supposed to go back to the Satmar Rebbe, and he's embarrassed. He's petrified. This is now the Rebbe's really going to let him have it. And he has so much Hakaras HaTov. He's so embarrassed. What exactly is he going to do? But he says that after everything the Rebbe did for me, it's the least I could do is to at least make a follow-up appointment. And so he calls the Rebbe's office and makes his follow-up appointment. He comes into the Rebbe's office. His hands are trembling. He's, you know, again, embarrassed. Ready to take the muster, but not really looking forward to it. He sits down at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe says, you know, how's your wife doing? And he gives him the full report. Baruch Hashem, the treatments have been successful. He says, I cannot thank the Rebbe enough for everything the Rebbe has done. And the Rebbe looks at him and says, you know, while you were away, you probably have been out of Parnassa. you weren't able to work remotely. You know, this goes back a bunch of years. Remote work wasn't so easy. You probably have lost parnassa, but your bills at home have still been accumulating. Can I ask, there's probably need some help. Can I offer you know, some money for you to be able to pay those bills at home? The journalist is shocked. The sensitivity, the thoughtfulness. He says, "Wow, thank you. That would be so appreciative. We haven't even been able to think about that." And the Rebbe gives him a check for about $10,000, and he says, "You should have a safe trip back, and your wife should have a continued refuah shleima." And this journalist reflects on the sensitivity, the ahavas chinam that the Satmar Rebbe showed him, in spite of the fact that he'd have every reason to have been upset at this person for the things that he has said. But greatness of Klal Yisrael is our ability to look past pettiness, to look past insults, to look instead towards rachamim, compassion. What it means to be one nation is to care about other people. And as we build the nation through Pesach, Pesach is the time of the formation of Klal Yisrael. A nation is created through compassion. Chirus is felt through caring about other people. Klal Yisrael are rachmanim. That's who our essence is. That's how we celebrate Nemirta Hashem, being able to use Pesach and Pesach as a springboard for post-Pesach as well, as a time to care for other people, to show compassion for other people, is the key to lock, God willing, Lashana Haba Ba'aretz Yisrael, Lashana Haba Yerushalayim HaBnei, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should restore the Beis HaMikdash and should allow us to celebrate there this upcoming year.